the airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. I'm out of the gate and I know what it's about. I'm out of the gate and I'm doing it loud. I'm a right and right. No one can take my life. I'm a fight and fight. No one can take my light. I'm ready to take flight. That was in the plan. Damn was damn. My words catch fire and my connect wires. It requires to inspire to the smallest, to the oldest, who mold us. Ancestors' prayers upstairs that we heal and repair. No one can compare. They stare and they stare. I'm aware, head up, no glare. I'm in the light. I'm in the fight. I'm in the sight. I'm out of the gate and I'm feeling it out. I'm out of the gate and I'm making a sound. I'm out of the gate and I know what it's about. I'm out of the gate and I'm doing it loud. I'm out of the gate and I'm feeling it out. I'm out of the gate and I'm making a sound. I'm out of the gate and I know what it's about. I'm out of the gate and I'm doing it loud.
Was OTG by JB, the First Lady. Unceded Airwaves broadcasts every week from the traditional ancestral and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Autumn Chanel Villagie, I am Treaty 11 Gwich'in and Anuvi Alouette on my mother's side, and I was born and raised in Amaskwatiwaskayagan on Treaty 6 of the Cree, Métis, Nakota, Sioux, and Soto peoples. And I acknowledge that I'm an uninvited guest on Coast Salish lands, and I'm really grateful to be here. I've been here for about 6 months now for my first year of university here at the colonial institution that is UBC, and I'm really grateful to be here. I spent about 17 years on Treaty 6, and I was also really grateful to be there. But yeah, do you want to introduce yourself, Ben?
Sure. My name is Ben Chung. I'm Korean and Jewish and grew up mostly on the Shawnee territory in what is now the United States. I'm a settler and also an invited guest on Coast Salish territories. I've been here for, I guess, 3 years now. Oy. But I'm enjoying it every single day.
And we also have a special guest in-house.
Hi, my name is Rose Eva. I usually appear on CGSR 88.5 and FM in Edmonton, but I'm visiting from Treaty 6 territory, so I want to say hi and acknowledge that I am an invited guest on Coast Salish territory, and I'm very grateful to be here. I grew up in Treaty 6 territory in Amiskwetchiwaskahikan, and on my mother's side, I'm third-generation settler on Iroquois territory in close to Montreal, and that I was born and raised on Treaty 6 territory, which is Cree, Métis, Nakota Sioux, and Soto territory.
Beautiful. Rose Eva was the one who taught me how to do radio. She's my radio mama. And now I'm here. She's on my show, which is weird because I was always on her show.
And I'm so proud to see Autumn do such a great job at CATR.
It's like watching drag, but with radio.
Oh, yeah.
The hope.
That's funny. I've been really into RuPaul's Drag Race recently.
Ah, yes.
So good. Yeah. Anyways, we want to thank our sponsors, Decolonizing Water and NORAD Electric. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 21 of Unceded Airwaves. I can't believe it's been 21 episodes. Can you believe it's been 21 episodes?
I can drink in the States.
It's legal. Thank God. and today we're going to be airing part of a workshop that Celia Joseph did on artistic cultural appropriation. For those of you who don't know who Celia is, look her up. She is great. She also did my job 2 years ago for Season 1 of Unceded Airwaves. And she's a super great Indigenous activist and she does really important things. And here is just a 40-minute example of the important things that she is doing. So buckle up, listen in, let Celia explain to you why appropriation is wrong, and if you're non-Indigenous, learn how to be a better person and not appropriate. But before we get into it, let's set our intention for the day. We are the Indigenous Radio Collective. Every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. We are a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
Our goal, we strive to center Indigenous voices on our show and to build narratives and empower Indigenous peoples. Unceded Airwaves is our opportunity to share and define the diversity of our cultures and highlight some influential Indigenous people as well.
If you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out. You can always reach us on our social media. We've got Facebook and Twitter. And if you have a voice for decolonization, we would love to hear from you.
Everyone is welcome, and there's no experience necessary. Our weekly meeting is every Wednesday at 1 p.m. at CITR in the lower level of the Nest. And if you want to get involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways to participate in this collective as well.
You can follow Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. If you're aware of a great Indigenous artist, send us a tweet using the hashtag Unceded Music, or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we'll do our best to get it on air. And if we play a song you send us, we will even give you a shout out.
We're always looking to hear from our listeners about what they're up to. So let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now and what events you're attending and promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show.
And before we get into this next song, I discovered it yesterday. I was sitting here in the CITR station. It was the person who made the song actually did all of the music for Martha of the North, either Martha of the North or Finding Martha. I don't know. Google it. It's a really cool documentary and you should watch it. And she is an Inuk artist named Alyssa P. Isaac. It's really lovely and dreamy, and y'all should be really excited to hear about it and also buy her music, because we need to buy Indigenous women's music in order to support them and sustain them. So, yeah.
Love. So you're a member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts around downtown at
Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium, Sikora's Classical Records, the Cinematheque, Vinyl Records, and the Fall Tattooing.
Ever used or wanted to use a community lending library, collective workshop, or bike co-op? Come out to Making Space, Questioning Power and Privilege in Makerspaces on Wednesday, November 29th in the Mount Pleasant Neighborhood House from 5 to 8 p.m. to examine how power and privilege shows up in makerspaces and explore strategies that support more inclusive and equitable initiatives. Go to diversityandmakerspaces.eventbrite.ca to register for this event, and there'll be free food.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves. The time is 2:13. The song you just heard was Saluit by Elisa P. Isaac. Saluit, we looked up, means the thin ones in Inuktitut. Interesting.
Now we're so cool.
Yes. Now we are going to listen to what Celia Joseph has to say about cultural appropriation, what it is, why it's wrong, and why you probably shouldn't do it. Thanks so much for Celia. Celia. Oh no, so many S's. Celia, for doing this for CITR and Discord.
Halshtuk Nutnut, Ayok Tanoyap, Halshin Squalloin, Queens Quachnomiap, Tietzitz, Chinquoment Homiap, Hamasquium Stamel, Chinquoment Homiap, Hamasquium Stamel, Chit Nam, Aitati, Nails, Ochomel nelta hamasquiam. Chinkomentomiap eok stam quiz nam etiti titsits nata tkoi natum ta ans. So, hello, my name is Celia Joseph. I come from the Squamish and Stenamel, Squamish and Stenamel First Nations on my father's side, and I'm British and Jewish on my mom's. Eleanor really did a great job in kind of summarizing what I've been up to in the last little while, and I'm really happy to be here and see so many familiar faces. And David here was a professor that kind of bridged a relationship between First Nations and Indigenous Studies and CITR with his passion for both media and decolonial critical thought, and that was such an important relationship for me. And I got to learn from Duncan, and I got to learn from Hugo and Eleanor. And I got to work with Madeline and learn alongside Madeline, so it's really nice to be back and talk about a really important issue that we all come into the room with different levels of understanding. It's going to mean different things to us because it's something that we're trying to learn about to prevent, but it's also something that might have really hurt you as an individual, that hurts you every day, or you've had an experience that that's been a really negative one, and like coming together as a group just then makes it that much less likely that we'll continue to need to have these conversations and continue to move through spaces feeling unsafe or unheard. So I think I will sit down now. Can you all still kind of see me and hear me? This is a bit more comfortable for me. So, appropriation, what's yours is mine. It's a deep-seated issue embedded in all sorts of things, but the most important things to note are power and privilege. It's both invisibility and hyper-visibility of people, of cultures, of minorities, but it's most importantly about a disregard of an entire context. It takes one aspect out of a greater context, isolates it, and takes that without permission. And there is a hip picture from Charlene Lee's Instagram of some of my own sacred medicine being stylized and reproduced for sale by a non-Indigenous company. And that's just the image I chose for the kind of underlying assumption of what's yours is mine, because anything of my culture or of a minority's culture is up for grabs, is up for taking without repercussion. I happen to love Charlie and Lee as a store, but that's the type of thing that we navigate on a daily basis, right? So power and privilege, thinking about how this operates within the greater context of appropriation. And it can be challenging having these types of conversations because what's obvious for some isn't obvious for others, and that's not like it's not necessarily a shortcoming, but I had some of these conversations for 5 years over the duration of my degree and could really understand how some of these things operate, or as a person of color, experience the world differently when I see something that triggers a response that I know to be appropriation. But as a kind of general definition, you have people in a position of power or that have a certain privilege over another group that can move in and out of a space utilizing aspects of someone's culture and be unmarked by it. You can move in and out of a space wearing a headdress, but you're not going to be racialized, and you're not going to have the same experience of potential violence or discrimination or oppression that a person of color would have in that same instance. Or it can detach something entirely away from its cultural context in a very disrespectful way, but there you need not feel any repercussions because what's mine is yours. What's yours is mine. And so we're continually bombarded with images of appropriation, whether it's in music, whether it's in fashion, whether it's in movies, TV, in magazines, and I can only speak to my own identity as an Indigenous woman as to how it affects me or my own personal experiences moving through the world, witnessing it that way. But I can tell you that all people of color are putting up with this shit on a daily basis. And this just kind of dips into just to spark some images that kind of point to some of these issues. And I really wanted to stress the multitude of effects this has on a variety of different cultures and different groups of people, and it's really real. And what this presentation looks to do, after kind of going through some more entry-level conversations about the definition of what appropriation is, it goes on to link the real severity of it with other structures such as representation. And from an Indigenous context, will link to dispossession, link to really serious things, and will examine just how critical this conversation is, because it is more than headdresses at Coachella. It's more than bindis, it's more than anything you see on this page, because in order to understand the real legacies of these images and the effects that they have, you have to link them to the tangible outcomes that people of color experience, and specifically from my perspective, the way that this impacts indigeneity and impacts the settler state and its direct relationship with dispossession and particularly representation. And so the question, what if America loved black people as much as black culture? I think that is a question that is a really important question to ask, and I will ask it around the concepts of indigeneity as well. So earlier I mentioned that within the realm of appropriation, there's a hyper-invisibility and a hyper-invisibility. So I'll ask you to think throughout this presentation about what it means when something is made overtly loud. So when you walk into YVR Airport and you are bombarded with art, and Coast Salish art is everywhere, and it can kind of create this idea that BC is this post-colonial province, that we are a woke province that is beyond colonization, because look at our relationship with indigenous people and look at our relationship with art. That's that hyper-invisibility. And then later on in the conversation, particularly as it pertains to indigeneity, we talk about hyper-invisibility. So what does the utilization of images like this, how does that further render indigenous people invisible? But most importantly, how does it render our issues and the complexities of a settler colonial body, colonized body, how does it render our issues invisible? So I think that question is really important, because the question of what if they liked our people as much as our culture, because what appropriation and the conversation really brings up is you can't have our culture and our aesthetic without our issues, which I'll elaborate on later. And the conversation around blackness, that could be somebody's whole PhD, right? But it's just an entrance point into this conversation. And so moving on to elaborate more on the effects of this conversation within indigeneity and the conversation of hyper-invisibility, there's a quote by Sherman Alexie that says, "In the great American Indian novel, when it is finally written, all of the white people will be Indians and all of the Indians will be ghosts." So I think of that image in the beginning of the presentation where it says, what's yours is mine. And what we've been told as Native people is that anything of ours is up for grabs. And the reason that the conversation around appropriation is so important is because it goes beyond, like I said, it goes beyond an aesthetic, and then that only then makes it okay for our bodies to be up for grabs, for our land to be up for grabs, for our water to be up for grabs, our art, our medicines. It gives a message that anything of ours is yours, and it's for the taking. So I have, in regards to Sherman's quote, that all the white people will be Indians and all the Indians will be ghosts, I have a little video by the 1491s to kind of demonstrate a little bit in a lighthearted way what I'm getting at, and also just when we talk about appropriation, the fact that you're in this room means you have some level of understanding about it, and that you're already not amongst the norm. You're already going upstream, right? But sometimes it can seem that this is so obvious to everybody else, or we run in circles where we're not having to have these conversations all the time necessarily, but it's not, and it's pervasive, and it's now, and it's in the news every day. Thank you.
And the guy dancing around in the headdress is he is actually indigenous.
Thank God.
So the 1491s are a comedy duo. Has anyone seen any of their videos before? Well, y'all are missing out. And that's definitely a resource to tap into. But so that takes place in Santa Fe Indian Market, which is a really interesting kind of, like, it's just an interesting case study for questions of indigenous presence and art and authenticity. And it's the biggest indigenous artisan fair in North America. And so it draws a whole whack of people. And all the artisans are indigenous, and they don't, and all of this belongings at the fair, they're all handcrafted. There's really specific guidelines for what you can sell. And so it's a case study of examining, just what happens when different people come together with different understandings of indigeneity and art, and the lines between tokenism and celebration, and how that works. And so they reclaimed that, like, super racist song, "I'm an Indian Too," because no, you're not, and complicated it. And so I appreciated that, and also there's only so much time in a day to gather as many kind of racist images as I could. It's really easy, because all you have to do is Google, like, American Indian. And those are the types of images that come up, but they did that for me, so that's really helpful. Because all those images that you see go to create a consciousness, and they tell a story. They tell a single story about indigeneity. And there are differences between representation in Canada and the States. And a lot of that imagery that you see will have a connotation with the States. But as far as North America's concerned, generally speaking, as far as the world is concerned, there is nothing outside of that image that the States has kind of rendered the authentic Indian or the vanishing Indian within people's consciousness or mindsets. And whether you're talking about the context of the American Indian or First Nations, Aboriginal, Inuit, Métis people, there is still an invisibility of a struggle, of a history of colonization, of a politic. There is still appropriation of imagery, of music, of culture, of medicine that disregards the greater context, whether we're talking north or south of the border. And so it's important, I like to think that we're here to, like, that we're all here to grow these conversations and to learn from each other. And when we sat together and we were talking about planning for this presentation, I think probably if you've showed up here, like I said, you know cultural appropriation is bad, but you might not have the language to articulate exactly why, because it takes so much to consider just how there's so many structures that are all intertwined that move together to talk about just how damaging it is. But one thing, a common place where we have to start is that it isn't the common denominator within our culture and within Western society is not that it's wrong. That's not the common denominator. This is the common denominator, because when you look up cultural appropriation, and the Urban Dictionary, the top definition, and I read, "The ridiculous notion that being of a different culture or race, especially white, in brackets, means that you are not allowed to adopt things from other cultures. This does nothing but support segregation and hinder progress in the world. All it serves to do is to promote segregation and racism." In quotations. "The plain-ass white bitch is wearing a bindi. That's classic cultural appropriation. Doesn't Osaka in Japan have a bastardized, Americanized city? Isn't that cultural appropriation? Cultural appropriation only applies to white people, so that doesn't count." So there is a lot of defensiveness around this conversation, and there are a lot of white butts. The white butt is that instinct to be immediately defensive when called to account, or when the word privileged is used, or a conversation starts to get uncomfortable, or something is being threatened to be taken from you that you think you should have. And when a lot of the time that immediate shoulder up reaction about feeling like you're going to lose something is because it's already been taken from someone else and someone else is asking for it back. And so that then begs a whole other conversation, a whole other presentation around reverse racism, which is a thing. Because what, and we'll return to kind of what we were originally talking about with cultural appropriation, is it's inherently connected to power and inherently connected to privilege. So it's not somebody's culture and person and body and who they are is being threatened because it's being compartmentalized, it's being stolen, aspects of it are being completely decontextualized. And so it doesn't work the other way. That doesn't really enter the conversation. A more nuanced conversation is around lateral appropriation amongst people of color, and that's a more nuanced conversation that belongs to people of color to talk to amongst themselves, because it's our business how we support each other. But that's not to derail that this issue of appropriation is inherently about power and privilege. It's not that there aren't always nuances to talk about and ways to become better and more accountable to each other, because there are. And nobody can sit here saying that that they know it all and that they haven't laterally run the risk of hurting someone else. And whether that was your intention or not doesn't really play into the equation. There's always room for people to grow. And the most important part is opening your ears to the people that that have been hurt or affected, listening to what people are telling you. And if they're telling you not to do something, then don't do it. But we're honoring you. The honoring you trope is a pretty, it's like a seemingly obviously easy one to debunk, but it's so common. And when it doesn't have to be so obvious as the conversation around mascots, or at least how this, because obviously it's not obvious, the conversation around mascots, because there are so many racist ones that are still doing their thing. But the conversation and the rhetoric and the old trope of we're honoring you is tested and true, and it's people are using it all the time, and that's what I'm sure Charlie and Lee would say if I wrote to them and I said, you know, I find it pretty uncomfortable that I see sacred medicine being sold as an aesthetic within your shop. And what I would get back is something along these lines. And it's good to put this in your toolbox as you gain the language to debunk myths around cultural appropriation and myths around what it means to honor somebody, because this isn't it. There's a blog called Cultural Appropriations, and she put this little bingo sheet together, and it kind of explores some of the main things that you'll hear in response to talking about cultural appropriation. So don't you have something more important to worry about? Other countries appropriate things from America. I just wear, read, and watch this because I think it's cool. Fashion, art, music, film always borrows from other sources, which is a really important point that we'll hold on to and put in our back pocket as we further the conversation around art, because there is a lot of nuance within art and around borrowing, but it is still intrinsically linked to power and privilege. Even though history and the art world and the music world and the film world tries to tell you it's not, it is. I asked the person from that culture and she said it was okay. It's just art, fashion, movies, you know, genre, fiction. I lived in another country for years. That isn't cultural, that's iconic. This fashion, religion, music really speaks to me on a level that white stuff doesn't. I don't find this offensive. I'm just showing appreciation for that culture. If you don't like it, don't buy it, don't read it, don't watch it. There's no such thing as white culture. Stereotypes exist because they have truth in them. So because I'm white, I'm automatically racist? You're just trying to tell everyone what to think. I'm just filling a niche. If I didn't offer this, someone else would. Also really common. But I'm doing it respectfully. First, you were mad because everything was Anglo-centric. Make up your mind. You're just looking for something to be offended about. So if I wear them clothing, I'm a racist? White people experience racism too. This is promoting understanding between cultures. White culture is boring. It's important to like to go through this list, and it's so helpful that she created it because whether or not you're at this workshop because you are you yourself experience your culture being appropriated daily, and it's really exhausting, and you want to sit around in and around a conversation that's going to critically just debunk that, and hold space for that, that it's just not okay. Or whether you're here because you're continually seeing other people's culture being appropriated, and it's not okay anymore, and you want to have language to address the issue and to identify it. It's for me, I hear this kind of shit all the time, and I have to defend myself against these kind of statements all the time. And if that's not your reality, it's really good that you know this is the kind of shit that people are uttering, so that you have just those same tools in your basket to debunk those, and to be able to explain why it isn't just an honoring, why it isn't just a culture, why we're not just complaining again, you know. But that same trope is so tired, and it gets put on people of color all the time. Like, it's put on Indigenous people all the time. You're just complaining again. This is just another thing to complain about. First it was this, now it was this. And it gets really exhausting. But this whole presentation is to try and show just what's at stake here. And that it isn't just a dog wearing a headdress from Urban Outfitters. That it is connected to a lot more. Well, speaking of Urban Outfitters, this was a picture of a line of like Navajo wear that they're selling, and there's a flask, it's undies, some socks with some kind of like Navajo-esque style designs, and they were taken to court by the Navajo Nation. And this was a while ago, and this is what kind of triggered the Native Appropriations blog, because this was like 5 years ago or whenever, when this kind of geometric aesthetic became really popular. It was totally detached from an idea that it might come from somewhere. It's totally detached from an idea that these designs might have a greater context. So then you have Urban Outfitters saying, like, hey, yo, like, everything we do is inspired by something. And, yeah, we're not ripping you off, we're just honoring you, or we didn't take this from a specific rug, like, we made it on our computer. Like, all these just, like, it's a, like, whatever the excuse, what it does is it turns a culture, it turns a history, it turns a people into just an aesthetic, into something you can buy into something you can put on, but most importantly, something you can take off. So I really thank Urban Outfitters for such a poignant example of privilege, right? Because you can take off the design, but you don't wear it. And so I have this tattoo design on my arm. Can you all see? Not unlike what we see on the screen here. But this design is an ancestral weaving design, and it's like my family's crest. The design is a Chief Joseph design, and that's the chieftainship name that my father, Squarquamtin Siem, carries. And it means the leader who stands on the mountain and looks after his people as long as the eye can see. And so colonization on the coast is so recent that I only have 3 sets of grandparents that have English names. Beyond them, it's just Squarquamtin Siem, Squarquamtin Siem, Squarquamtin Siem. So when I look at my family tree, this is my dad, Chief Floyd Joseph, Squatter Compton, Larry Joseph, Squatter Compton, Moses Joseph, Squatacompton, and then from beyond there, Squatacompton CM. And each generation fought for this design, fought for what it means to think about family, to think about community. And then my aunties, they fought to bring this design back into wool. And that meant going completely upriver and sifting for the knowledge of how to wool weave that was so nearly lost on the coast because it was kept from us. So there's this whole history embedded with who we are as Squamish people, who I am as a Joseph, who I am as the daughter of Squatacompton CM, and come from a long line of people that carried that name. And embedded in resistance, embedded in what my aunties did so that I could know of this design, so I could wear it on my body, so that I could wear it on my regalia and on my drum. So that's what this design is. That's what these designs are. That then get completely taken out of context and put onto flasks, onto socks, onto underwear. They get put on in the beginning of the day and they get taken off in the end. But they don't have to, the people wearing these designs don't necessarily have to wear not only the immense privilege that comes with the design of that kind of nature. They don't have to think about that. They don't get to think about that. But they don't have to wear the burden. They don't have to wear the burden of colonization. They don't have to wear that grief. And you can, any form of cultural appropriation, a person of color can sit there and walk you through a really similar story that I did around the significance of something that's been taken out of its context. That's, so without even linking this conversation to where we're going to talk about dispossession, to talk about representation or violence, even on just on a baseline level of respect and ignorance, it's so important to know the story of what you're buying, what you're condoning, the stories that you're listening to, who's telling them, and that you're listening to the right storytellers, and that you're buying from the right artists. The relationship between representation and appropriation. So, I love talking about representation. And that's, it was always going to make its way into any presentation you asked me to do because it's so interesting and important. And the most important thing about it is that it has really lived consequences, really tangible, felt consequences on the lives of people. Because representation tells a story.
Born out of an initiative to give more voice to local women artists and musicians, Mixtapes is a Vancouver-based biannual mixtape featuring women-identified musicians and sound artists from the Pacific Northwest. The Spring 2018 edition will be coming out on May 10th, with all proceeds going to the Downtown Eastside Women's Shelter. Women-identified artists are invited to send their submissions to btchtapes@gmail.com. The release fundraiser will be held on May 10th at the Redgate Review Stage, featuring artists selected for this edition of the cassette.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute. Just visit citr.ca/discorder/contribute. You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
You're You're listening to Unceded Airwaves. The time is 2:49 p.m. on Wednesday, March 28th. My name is Autumn Schnell, and you just heard Celia Joseph speak about cultural appropriation. That was only part one, though. Don't worry. There will be a part two. We're going to air all of it because you need to hear it. Now we have Unceded events where we highlight Indigenous relevant events that you might be interested in attending. So do you want to go for the first one, Number Ben?
Sure thing.
Number Ben.
Nope. So the first Number Ben is Elements of Indigenous Storybook Launch. Massey Books is pleased to host Greg Younging for the launch of his newest book, Elements of Indigenous Style. His book provides guidelines for writers, editors, and publishers to produce material that reflect Indigenous people in an appropriate and respectful manner. Features include guidance on working in a culturally sensitive way, a discussion of problematic and preferred terminology, and suggestions for editorial guidelines. This is a free event, woo, on Saturday, March 31st, 2018, at Massey Books, 229 East Georgia Street.
So the next one that we have is CITR and Discorder's 2018 annual General Meeting and Volunteer Appreciation Party. The AGM and Volunteer Appreciation Party is an annual event where CITR and Discorder, the CITR and Discorder communities come together to celebrate the success of the past year, elect a new prez and vice prez, and acknowledge the amazing contributions of our volunteers. If you're a member, come hang out with us and vote for the student exec next year. Ooh. This happens tonight. Are you going, Ben?
I am going.
Ben's going.
Oh my God.
You all have to come and meet Ben tonight from 6 to 9 p.m.
My name is Rose Eva, and I'm here to host as well, and I'm letting you know about UBC Indian Residential School History and Dialogue Center. So following a conference held on March 2011 by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada on Institutions of Memory, the UBC First Nations House of Learning, FNHL, and Indian Residential School Survivor Society, IRSSS, began discussions about an institution of memory addressing the experiences of survivors of the Indian residential schools on the West Coast. So this is happening at 2029 West Mall. The grand opening is on April 10th at 10 a.m. So save the date because UBC is hosting. So we will see you all there.
Do you want to read the fifth or the fourth Number, Ben?
Sure. So April 22nd, the Wise Hall and Lounge at 1882 Adnack Street. Come to listen to Buffy St. Marie. Whee! Call resistance an act of love. Name activism as belief in restoration. Trust as resilience. And music as medicine. There is alchemy in the work of Buffy St. Marie. Utilizing a generous body of work spanning half a century, Buffy St. Marie reminds us that the truest wealth we can accumulate is in community, story, connection, and truth. Through word and song, she moves us to look our own reflections in the eye and raise our voices to meet this mission. Bending her voice to the ear of the people, as always, Buffy St. Marie and guests Ronnie Dean Harris, Micholos Tucci, and Anuseum call out to our beating hearts. We will gather together and will we gather together in this work? We are the ones who must decide.
So thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Celia Joseph for doing this important work and allowing us to record and air it. We would like to thank our sponsors, Norad Electric and Decolonizing Water. And the next show that you'll hear is Cue It Up. My name is Autumn Schnell, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. Now enjoy some Leanne Simpson. She is one of my favorite Indigenous artists, and this is my favorite song by her. So enjoy this, and see y'all next week when my mom will be here. So you can listen to my mom and me bug my mom on air. It'll be so fun. But for now, enjoy Leanne.
Dirt road, open windows, beautiful one, too perfect for this world. The immediacy of mosquitoes, humidity choking breath, my beautiful singing bird. 5-year-old Gichidakwe, crying silent, petrified tears in the back seat until the dam finally bursts. You are the breath over the ice on the lake. You are the one the grandmothers sing to through the rapids. You are the saved seeds of allies. You are the space between embraces. She's always gonna remember this. You are rebellion, resistance, reimagination. Her body will remember. You are dug-up road, 27-day standoffs, the foil of industry prospectors. She can't speak about it for a year, which is 1/6 of her life. For every one of your questions, there's a story hidden in the skin of the forest. Use them as flint, fodder, love songs, medicine. You are from a place of unflinching power, the holder of our stories, the one who speaks up. The chance for spoken up words drowned in ambush. You are not a vessel for white settler shame, even if I am the housing that failed you.